Hey, I'm Ivy Johnson, your host, and you're listening to Just the Touches Robe podcast, where we talk about classic testimonies from the Bible and hear from people about the life-changing moments that led them to believing in God. Listen and see why I, along with so many others, believe that just the smallest touch of Jesus can transform your life. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Just the Touches Robe podcast. I am here with a very special guest today. As always, I'm here with Coach Johnson, or as people very, very close to him call him Stan or Uncle Stans. But I'm here with my uncle. I love him so very much, and he is such an inspiration to me, and he's such a great man of God. I initially planned on having him on my podcast a little bit later, but ended up happening where I'm having him on here on this episode. But yeah, I just love his story a whole lot and how he came to know the Lord. And I feel like it's a good representation of like what our family's built on. Coach Johnson, or also known as Uncle Stan, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself? You have a lot of cool things that you do.
I'm very fortunate that I have the opportunity to do a lot of different things with a lot of different people in a lot of different age groups. So my livelihood, my title is Youth Development Specialist. And I'm stationed at the Oval Indian Mounds, and I work for the Lawrence County School System, which I am very proud of our school system. I just think we have a great school system. Also, many different responsibilities with that job title. One very important thing that I do, I coach cross country. So again, I'm working with teenagers and middle school age. I coach cross country at Lawrence County High School and Moulton Middle School. And I direct the Strawberry Festival, and I help with other events, and I direct the Veterans Parade, and I help with the Christmas Parade. And I do a lot of different events throughout the year, especially with the cross country races in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, cross country is a big thing that you do in your life. It's been a very big part in your life. For how many years have you been doing that?
34.
Wow. Serious? Mm-hmm. As you can tell with all he said, he hates when I say this, but he does a whole lot in the community. In my eyes, he's very famous. We walk into Walmart and like several people know him. And like, I think last time I went into Walmart with him, I counted like 11 people stopped us to talk to him. That is because of his good heart and the man of God that he is, and all of the people that he's poured into with cross country and with working in the school system. But he's always just trying to make a difference in everyone's life, including mine. But anyways, you didn't just become the man that you are overnight. It took a whole lot of like sculpting. You went through a lot of things to be where you are today. To me, it's very inspiring that you overcame so much and you still claim God as your father and as your king, just because of like where you came from, and just because like you have people throwing out things like, oh, you'll never be able to do this, God would never choose you. People who might feel that God might not necessarily like want them. If you could just kind of tell us a little bit about your childhood, how you came to know the Lord.
I remember back when some of the struggles began. It always has an impact on me of when as young as I was, and my mom dying, and I thank God that us four siblings were never separated, that we were kept together. That's Patricia, mom, Anita, Susan, myself.
You.
Okay. And we were kept together. And then with our dad having the alcohol problem, which I wrote about both, the alcohol problem and not having a mom growing up, in the book that I wrote, Experiencing Rare Moments. It was challenging, but I was so young that I just knew that, you know, I didn't have some of the things that the other kids had. And we didn't have money to do things. And sometimes we didn't have abundance of food. And looking back, so many people stepped in and helped us, you know, make it through those hard times. And I remember the days sometime when my grandparents' other children would move in for a while, and we just had a lot of us. It's almost like a camp. And those were good times, even though it was challenging and difficult on the adults. But us kids didn't know much about it, and we would just go on and we'd have fun. And, you know, build relationships with our cousins. It was challenging, hurting as it was when my mom died and growing up.
And she died when you were very young.
I was 8 years old.
Yeah, 8 years old.
Yeah, and that was difficult. As in last night, every time I'm around a group of people and I have the opportunity, I talk about surrounding yourself with good people.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we survive. And I think God put a lot of those people in my life. And, you know, I've chosen some, I mean, to be around as I've grown older. But if we surround ourselves with good people in our lives, we're going to be successful, and we invest in people and give back. I used to wonder, you know, well, why did I go through that I didn't have parents growing up, and, you know, that we were poor. But now I see that I have the experience and the survival kit, quote unquote, that I can help others as well. I've learned the motto of not know, but how.
From my understanding, a lot of times people would look down on y'all in a way because yeah. of your situation, because of coming from a home that necessarily didn't look like others, with y'all's like father struggling with an alcohol addiction, and you know, kind of like living with your grandparents. Y'all were very poor.
Boy, very,
very much living in a lot of poverty. They would get bullied a lot for that and picked on, just belittled. Was there ever a time in your childhood where you kind of like felt that way about yourself, where you like felt like, there's no way I could become something greater because this is the situation I've been put in?
I don't recall that as a little boy. Now, once I got out of high school, something happened and I didn't have that confidence. I didn't think, you know, I was just sort of, I was settling for certain things where I could have done better. There was nothing wrong with the places I worked at, but some of them were not full-time jobs. I was not in school. Something happened. It's almost like I didn't move forward. I didn't take a step back, but I did not move forward with the career things. I still had my church family. I still had the people in my family that loved me. So things like that were very good. I was very undecisive. I was very paranoid, and I just did not have goals at that time. It wasn't that I couldn't do better. I just didn't have the confidence at that time, maybe to pursue more education or a better paying job, or I didn't think about future things.
In a way, do you think that lack of confidence came from not knowing that God is at the center of all of that, and that he's going to like take care of you and provide for you? And if you just would have like relied on him a little bit more.
Very likely so, just as in today and like with everybody, not relying on God enough, not really knowing. You know, people probably didn't push me as much as I push people now. I think I was more, because of not ever having stability financially, hey, I got to work. I got to work
yeah.
instead of trying to pursue.
Well, you
kind of
had to build yourself from the ground up. You kind of like reconstructed everything.
Well, I wouldn't say everything, because I want to go back to love. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you had that foundation.
We had that foundation.
Yeah.
Love and loyalty. We had each other's back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So maybe that is the foundation that everything else was built on. So you
Absolutely.
At least had that to start out
and
building
good morals.
On. Yeah.
I mean, there was a time in my life when, as good as my grandparents were to me, you know, they had their own children, and
mm-hmm.
they didn't have the skills, or really that, hey, you know, they came and watched my ball games. You know, they're going to sit me down and ground me. So there was a time I could have gone either way.
Mm-hmm.
I think I chose the way I did because of the people around me.
Yeah, pouring into you.
My sisters,
mm-hmm.
my grandparents, even though not just
right.
the stability of them being there and taking care
yeah,
of me.
Yeah, that love.
My aunt and uncles.
And
my
even,
aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
In the church.
Even if family-wise, like if they weren't like spiritually pouring into you at the time, I still feel like that love that you're talking about comes nowhere else but from God. It's definitely God through them pouring in that love into your life. The like circumstances y'all were in, what other lot would you have had if it wasn't for love?
Right.
And that's God looking out for you, you know? I know you keep mentioning your church family, and I know that was a big turning point for you. And now you being a coach, you get to, like, pour into people as well. When did you start getting involved in church and, like, knowing about God, really?
I knew about God, and I remember my Aunt Sheila, some in her first marriage, they were somehow involved in church. but we never went to church, quote unquote. When we moved into Moulton, into the city limits, the Moulton Church of Christ ran a, they brought a church bus through our subdivision. So most of all the kids, with the exception of me, rode that church bus. And I remember Susan, being your mom, started riding the church bus before I did. And so there were four people, Carolyn, Anthony Turner, and Dwayne and Donna Key, who managed that church bus. And there was one of those who reached out to me a little bit more than anybody else ever, ever in my life. And that was Dwayne Key. Even though, okay, let me make sure I'm clear on this, our family was love-bound, okay? But when he reached out to me and sort of became my father figure, a stability for me, not only the church and then his stability, started helping me, you know, grow in certain areas. I think my spiritual life really, you know, picked up there.
All from someone, like, taking the time to get to know you personally, just, like, kind of, like, fighting for you in a way, like, seeing, like, a lot of potential in you.
Yeah, and I mean, big time.
Yeah.
I mean, big, big time, not just on the church bus, but, you know, the book that I wrote a first ball game he took me to, you know, I just latched on to him sometime too much. I guess at times I was afraid of losing him as well, like I lost other people in my life. That continues even today. He's, you know, he is still one of my go-to people.
Yeah, and that just goes to show, like, ministry is, like, not just when you're in the church building, not just when you're in, like, on the church bus. Like, that's, like, taking the time to be intentional with people outside of that. Like, him going to your ball games and stuff, like, that was special to you. That impacted you a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, Patricia was the one taking me to my ball games, and she would be one of the few family members that would come and watch. She would do the best that she could, you know, to get me, you know, from practice. And she would do the discipline. You know, she would spank Susan and me.
Yeah. Or Patricia's the oldest sister, by the way.
She would ground us.
Yeah.
And she worked full time and saw to, you know, that, you know, we had what we needed. But that's sort of the stages there. It's sort of like everybody, I don't know if everybody considers this or not, but with all the people in your life, there's just stages. And these people are important at this time of your life and still are important. But you move to another stage maybe and there's somebody else that God causes your roads to cross. And then that person makes the impact in that state of your life.
Yeah. I've heard someone call it before, like, a divine appointment.
Oh, I like that.
God places people exactly, like, when you need them, even without you knowing it. Maybe you don't realize it in the moment, but you look back and you're like, wow, I did not realize how much of an impact that had on me. And thinking about Dwayne, how he always almost, like, makes me want to cry. The way that he, like, took up so much time with you, similar to how, like, Jesus loves us, very big representation, in my opinion, of how, like, Jesus would love people. And being so intentional. You're still going to that church today, and it's brought you so many opportunities to, like, minister to other people. I know you've poured into, like, countless kids spiritually. You might not admit it. You get to do that uplifting now, you know, because someone impacted you in that way, like,
well,
the gospel.
Talking about the stages, like, you know, right in there when all of that, you know, Patricia and my grandparents, you know, Faye and Hillard was always my aunt, uncle, or aunt, uncle, they were always a rock. You know, when tragedy would strike, or when we would need money, or need clothes, or need something.
I was wanting to know if you, like, had a moment that you can remember in your life where you were like, something has got to change. Like, I know that God is my father. This is the truth. Like, I'm a child of God. If you ever had an epiphany moment where you were like, just overwhelmed with, like, the things of, like, the Holy Spirit, being like, oh my gosh, like, I am so thankful to know God. Like, I know for me, I don't have just a moment in my life where I was like, oh, God is real, like, this is, like, legit. I have, like, little moments all throughout my life. One specific moment I do remember is when I, like, finally started trying to actually have my own relationship with God rather than just piggybacking off of like me growing up in church and stuff. It was like 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning and I was waiting for the kids I babysit to get up. I remember I was just sitting there listening to like worship music and reading the word. I remember just like sitting back and being like, oh my gosh, I feel so different than how I was like a month or two ago. And that is because like I've come to know God as like a father. And I was like, it literally feels like a lens has been taken off of my eyes and I see things completely different now. Everything is so much more pure to me. Everything has meaning. Everything's intentional to me. Everything either carries life or death. And I remember feeling like this is the most confident I've ever felt because I knew I had God as my foundation. So I was just wondering if there was ever a moment in your life where you kind of like got hit, got like overwhelmed with like, oh my gosh, this is the real deal.
I don't remember one moment. As you said, there's been a lot of, you know, just multiple moments. There have been some times, if you know, when I've been on that mountaintop several times and things, perhaps like you're asking, happened. I know Camp Wiregrass, which I'm contemplating going back to now.
What is Camp Wiregrass? For those who don't know.
Camp Wiregrass is a Christian youth camp in South Alabama. I was introduced to, and it helped change my life. And Hoyt Nelson, who also helped change my life, he was our minister at the time. And so my friends and Hoyt, they finally talked me into trying it out. It was overwhelming. I think that's some of the time when I started changing maybe on some other things in my life.
Overwhelming in the way of what?
It's
like
just this place where all these, you know, people and your focus is, you know, praising God, building up, building each other up, confessing.
So overwhelming in the fact of like feeling just the presence of God on your life, in your heart.
He also, my very first year is my second year of being a counselor, threw a lot of responsibility on me. And I wished I could ask him today, what did you see in me to do this? He had a huge impact on my life. So as Jimmy Glenn did, who was our youth minister at the time. So, yeah, I've had a lot of those times there. But, yeah, several times, even up to today, you know, there will be times where I'm just like, when I've learned and I've grown, I look at looking at things differently, looking at people differently.
Yeah.
And so
seeing, and I think that that's like a good thing to take away from your story is like looking at people and seeing potential in them and trying your hardest to look at people how Jesus would look at people. Often it's hard for us to get so busy in our head and not just like turn our heads and like look at someone, you know, like I don't know, just think about you like walking on a street and like just trying to avoid eye contact with people or something because you're like, oh, I got to get to this place. If you would just turn your head, that could be someone who's going to, like, minister to thousands of people if you just would have, like, taken the chance on that.
So many people, they really believe they can't do any better or any more or be what they want to be. They are so sometimes satisfied, but so many times they don't have the confidence to reach out, like like I say, not know, but how.
Yeah.
And they settle. They settle for less.
Yeah. And that feeling of like having God on your life and feeling like God's presence, what do you think your life would even look like without that? How would you live your life?
Well, I think I'd still have good morals.
Yeah.
You know, I'd still have good morals and I think I would still. Sure. Well, and there's a difference. Yeah. Sometimes we think we're Christians because we follow rules. But it's so different when you really are getting to know Jesus.
Yep.
And you're living your life because of the love of him, not because you're trying to check off a list.
Ooh.
Not because you're worried. And I still got a lot of growing to do here, that he's ready to hit you over the head every mistake you make. You're his child. And he loves to forgive. He loves to see you come back. And I think sometimes we are scared of that. We, you know, we think that people are just, it's just all about love. Is there rules? Well, it is all about love. There are expectations, and the Word of God is that plan. And so I don't think that once you become a Christian, you can just go out and do anything you want all the time. No, you still have rules, laws, expectations to go by. But it's a grace and freedom there instead of just trying to walk a line and then he's going to slap you down every time you do something wrong.
Yeah. I mean, and that's my thing. Like, what was the sacrifice he paid on the cross for, you know?
Yeah.
And something that he said when he, I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. It was before, it might have been when he was on the cross or right before he got on the cross to be crucified. He said, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they've done."
Yeah.
That's how he sees us still every single day. It's like, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they've done." It is beyond me, the like grace and mercy that he has. If there is one thing that you could share with a non-believer or someone who is struggling believing that God like loves them, like what would you tell them from like your personal experience?
I would want to convince them of hope. I don't think we really invest in hope enough. When I talk to a runner about, are you going to meet this certain goal? They'll say, "I hope." I said, "No, doing it and hoping is when you don't have any control. You going out and doing it, you have control."
Mm-hmm.
But our church said this about the Sermon on the Mount, maybe the Beatitudes themselves, okay? Part of the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are you, blessed are you, blessed are you. And maybe it was the one about mourning, I'm not sure. But if I don't know if you ever thought about this, but just, you know, you get down to the point and all you have is the ability to beg.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you have. So you're at a point, really, we had a point in his grace. I don't think we use hope enough. Hold on to that hope.
Yeah.
So that's what I would try to convince him of, that you have hope. Now, sometimes we say, "Ivy, you can go do this."
Mm-hmm.
But before I tell you, "You can go do this," or "Nash, you can win at this," Zoe, we got to have a
backbone on what's getting you through that.
Well, yeah. We got to show you how you can do this. You know, a lot of times we say, "You got this, we can do this," but how are you going to do this? Have something. So,
and that how is,
you've got to convince them that they have hope. And it's not just say, "You can do this," but show them how they can do this. Don't quit on them, okay? Before you spend, earn. I'm getting to something. All right. Before you quit, try. And then before you die, live. And all this that we've talked about, he still wants us to have an abundance of life.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I could ask you, what is your cause? What is your cause? Is your cause too small? You know, is your cause too small? If our cause is too small, then all this other stuff is overwhelming us and we're worrying about it. But when we have a cause that's bigger than this, all that other stuff is going to go away.
Yep.
Is your cause too small?
He's preaching now.
I'm preaching now.
He's preaching now. He's like, "I didn't do it." Yeah. Wow. That's really good.
But I had a very precious man that I call every now and then about some things. In addition to Dwayne Key. And I had a tragedy struck a few years ago. And he told me, he said, and I talked to him about some things on that. But then when I retired, he told me, he said, "This is going to sound so egotistic," but he said, "We've not seen the best of you yet." And so it would be the best of God working through me.
Yeah.
And even though I get a little discouraged about my age and I'm thinking things are over, things are winding down.
Lies.
there's just so much more I want to do. And, you know, I take a lot of criticism, and people think I'm crazy. I am.
Yeah.
But I'm going to, unless it affects somebody in a bad way.
Crazy in the best way possible.
I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. Yeah. And that's, you know, I make a lot of mistakes.
So many people, I feel like, think that they're like, oh, it's past. My time has passed.
Yes.
You still have the Holy Spirit living inside of you. You still have, God is still using you, you know, like, all right, well. This has been very good. You done started preaching there at the end. It was I teared up a few times. It was really good. I'm not really sure before Stan came into the podcast that he really knew what a podcast was. He says he does, but I tried to send him my podcast to listen to, you know, I've only had two episodes, but he said he wanted to do his own thing. So he asked me if he was going to sing on here today. But I, for you never have really listened into a podcast or not knowing really what it was coming in, I think that you did an excellent job. Well, you thought
you had a tape recorder.
You thought you were going on the radio station today.
No, not after a while. I thought you were recording the podcast at the radio station and it would go on the radio station later.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you had an idea. Both of my podcasts, like episodes, someone listening from Belgium, both times. So shout out to my Belgium listener. I don't know who you are, but praise God you're listening to my episodes. I appreciate it. But I can like see on the map where everyone from all over the world is like listening. So very cool. But yeah.
And talking about, speaking of praising God, I go back to, if you're having a little difficulty in was Jesus real, go to 1 John 1 and 1 John. And there, where John is a witness, they actually touched Jesus. They saw Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
They was around Jesus.
Well, you know what the name of my podcast is?
I don't.
It's called Just to Touch His Robe Podcast.
Oh, that's what you said at the beginning.
Which,
I didn't understand.
Yeah.
And the woman with the blood issue. Do you know what? Maybe she. I did a lesson at camp one time. And all these things, I made people on graphs,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, before she got to Jesus, she went to the oncologist,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, yeah, I think that's a cancer doctor, and then she went to the neurologist, and maybe she went to all
mm-hmm.
those things, but, you know, maybe she crawled. Are we willing to crawl to touch him? Maybe she brought embarrassment on herself. To get to him, are we willing to do that?
Oh yeah, people thought she was disgusting.
Would we jump over people
to get to him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really good.
To get to him,
you have to go back and listen to my first episode of my podcast. That's what my first episode is about.
And
because
then, you know, he said, I mean, all these people were touching him, all these people were bumping up against him,
mm-hmm.
but he said, "Who touched me?
The power
and
has left
Peter,
me."
Peter, the big mouth mm-hmm. one, said. Come on, G.
Uh-huh.
We're all touching you.
Yeah.
No, someone touched me.
He said, no, like, I have felt the power leave my body.
Yeah.
So after this, Stan's going to go listen to my first podcast episode. But he didn't, to be fair, he didn't know this was all going on. But, yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I love you so very much.
I love you.
This
You're
is
still my princess, even.
My mm-hmm. prince. He actually gave me a copy of his book and signed to my princess. But, yeah, this has been so great. I'm excited for people to listen to this. But, yeah, thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope that this ministered to you in some way. And, yeah, I hope you listen again next time. See you guys in, like, 2 weeks. Thank you for sharing your time with me. As always, it's an honor to have your support. Keep listening to hear more life-changing testimonies like the one you heard today. And if this testimony wasn't convincing enough, keep listening to hear other people's reasoning for believing that just the smallest touch of Jesus can transform your life. Make sure to subscribe and share the good news. And until next time, as always, praying for you guys.